Finally, the economic recovery is lagging. We're bumping up against the debt ceiling. We're still fighting two wars, maybe three if you count Libya. We're in a mess. So why do I feel the need to talk about some of the latest television offerings, especially the so-called reality shows like Basketball Wives? The third season premiere was last week on VH1. I'll give you a little taste from season two in case you missed it.
You think I, like, researched who dude was with? It was like you didn't even exist.
I'm certainly not going to let you sleeping with him mean something to me. That wasn't the issue.
You're missing the point of what the I'm saying.
Basketball Wives follows the exploits of a cast of women who are, or were, or sorta kinda, married to professional athletes. It's executive produced by Shaquille O'Neal's former wife, Shawnee O'Neal, the mother of five of the children they had together. Of course, this is only one of the reality show genre. There are shows about people who make cupcakes, detail motorcycles, get tattoos. But the big deal shows are the shows aimed at women. Teen Mom, for example, The Real Housewives franchise, and of course, Basketball Wives. Now, my quarrel is not just with Basketball Wives. All of these fake so-called reality shows are essentially the same. They're either mostly white with a token Latina or black woman. They're mostly black with a token Latina or white woman thrown into the mix. Everybody's wearing expensive clothes, living in lavish homes, and driving fancy cars. And in between all that, they're very busy shopping and drinking champagne and cursing each other out. And generally, doing a whole lot of nothing much else, which is why I call them so-called reality shows, because I don't know about you, the expensive clothes and big jewels and nice houses in the lives of the people I know who have those things come from working. And we don't see too much of that on those shows. Isn't it strange, though, that in a world where the buzz attracting possible presidential contenders is about women, where the big advances in fighting poverty around the world center on women, where the human rights causes of the day often concern women, that we get television about women whose only claim to fame is who they are more or less married to? But even if it's a little out of sync, you can see why people think it's harmless fun. Can I just tell you, it's not harmless. The problem is these shows are teaching a whole generation of people exactly how not to behave in life and in a relationship with anybody, not just a husband. The drink throwing, the yelling, the fingers in the face, the B word thrown around like rain, it's exhausting, it's dysfunctional. And it's exactly how you don't want to behave if you ever want to succeed at anything except being a reality show star. And it's amazing to me that nobody seems to have noticed that in the case of Basketball Wives, at least Shawnee O'Neal, the executive producer, casts herself as counselor and peacemaker while the other women roll their necks and act crazy. And why is that? She said in interviews it's because of her children and the need for her to maintain cordial relations with her ex. So what about everybody else's kids? Why isn't it important that other people's children see adults treat each other with respect, especially at a time when in some communities the majority of children are being raised in families where almost no one lives in a two-parent household? And I contrast this with the story we brought you last week about the Israeli father whose son was killed by Hamas. Instead of embracing bitterness, he has decided to partner with a Palestinian man, also a father, to create both scripted drama and less scripted reality shows by which he hopes to create a means for Israelis and Palestinians to see each other in a different light. Elsewhere in the world, television and radio programs are being crafted to educate people to fight the spread of HIV/AIDS, to teach women how to have safe sex, to resolve conflicts peacefully, and so on. Years ago, I moderated a panel for a foundation, and a large group of high school students were invited as guests to talk with an eclectic group of lawmakers and other bigwigs. Those high school kids were giving these adults the blues about everything under the sun. Meanwhile, a big-name hip-hop star came late, left early, took no questions, but got huge ovations every time he opened his mouth. And after he left, I asked the kids, why were they giving him all this love when he'd stayed for half an hour, when these members of Congress had been with them all afternoon and got none of that? And one young man named the hip-hop star and said, that's who we listen to because that's who we see. Exactly. And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and you've been listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more tomorrow.
Sony unveiled its next-generation portable video game device on the eve of a big game industry conference in Los Angeles. NPR's Nina Gregory has more.
Before Sony presented any of its new products, Jack Tretton, the CEO of Sony Computer Entertainment America, addressed what he called the elephant in the room. That was Sony's recent security breach that compromised 77 million accounts on the PlayStation Network.
I want to apologize both personally and on behalf of the company for any anxiety that we've caused you.
Then the company introduced games, 3D products, and finally, the PlayStation Vita. The handheld device is bigger than a phone, but smaller than a tablet. It's got a touch screen on the front and a touch pad on the back. There are cameras, motion sensors, buttons, and joysticks. There's also mobile connectivity, though there were groans at the announcement that AT&T would be its service provider. Vita will start at $249 and go on sale for the holidays. Nina Gregory, NPR News.
Another multimedia empire is looking for bids. Martha Stewart may sell the company that bears her name, that is, Martha Stewart Living Omnimedia. She's long had a reputation as a canny businesswoman, as well as a decorator, cook, TV personality. Even after 5 months in jail, she was able to resuscitate her career. But as Ilya Meretz from member station WNYC in New York reports, Martha Stewart's business has been losing money.
On TV, Martha Stewart makes cooking look easy. Easy for her.
So to frost, this is a delicious frosting made out of those egg whites.
In this clip from 2009, the Today Show's Matt Lauer and Meredith Vieira are at Stewart's sides, each standing over a cake on a cake stand, frosting knife in hand.
Now, you warm frosting, that to 150 degrees on a candy thermometer. Do you have a candy thermometer?
No, I do not, Martha.
Well, Martha Stewart does. It retails for around $12. And what you just heard was an example of the synergy that was supposed to make Martha Stewart Living Omnimedia a great company. She'd go on TV and publish books and magazines, what they call building the brand. Then people would be inspired to seek out her products in the store, Kmart, Home Depot, Macy's. In 2010, Martha Stewart sold almost $43 million of stuff. But when the year ended, her company had lost almost $10 million. In fact, it's lost money 7 of the last 8 years.
It's really hard to pinpoint exactly what happened.
Robert Routh is executive director of equity research at Phoenix Partners Group. He's been watching Martha Stewart's company closely, and he says several things went wrong.
One thing, obviously, with the economy, right? When the economy rolled over, that impacted any business like this because it's so dependent on the consumer in terms of eyeballs for the publishing and the broadcasting.
Magazines and books represent about 60% of Martha Stewart Living Omnimedia's revenues. But in the recession, advertising dried up and revenues declined. Same for the radio and TV part of her business. Merchandising did a little better. We'll get to that in a moment. First, jail. The Justice Department accused Stewart of making fishy stock trades. She was acquitted of insider trading, but convicted for obstruction of justice and did 5 months in prison. Believe it or not, Routh says, this was good for her company's share price. But not long after being freed, Stewart settled separate charges with the Securities and Exchange Commission and was banned from her own board for 5 years.
And as a result of that, there were certain people that decided they didn't want to own the stock. They didn't want to be involved with it.
Stewart had lost the confidence of Wall Street, but she continued to sell merchandise.
This table, it's amazing.
Kmart, it's all Martha Stewart every day.
Routh says sales of Martha Stewart products seldom hit the targets set in her 10-year deal with Kmart. Still, she made lots of money because the retailer was contractually obliged to pay her. Sounds like a good deal for Stewart, but there was a downside.
That deal really restricted the company's ability to enter into new markets and to develop certain products and deploy them as they would want to.
Last year, the Kmart agreement ended. Stewart's SEC ban is ending as well, and Stewart is preparing to rejoin her board. In May, the company hired the Blackstone Group. They're the people you call when you're interested in finding a buyer. Stewart owns about half of the company's stock, but speaking on CNBC last week, she was coy about a possible sale.
But it depends. Everything depends on what it is. We are a valuable company.
Robert Routh, the analyst, says a smart buyer will figure out how to bring down costs while capitalizing on Stewart's big asset, her ability to connect with consumers. People like Peter Krause, who emerged from a Home Depot in Manhattan last weekend with 2 cans of medium gray Martha Stewart paint in hand.
I'm doing some interior painting, and the color that we liked was her color. I've used her products before, and they work well, they behave well. Plus, I like all her colors.
Analysts say if she wants to fetch a good price for her company, Stewart, who's 69 years old, will have to commit to remaining its public face. For NPR News, I'm Ilya Meretz.
Summertime is when the big broadcast TV networks take a bit of a break, and cable networks roll out a lot of new shows. And Eric Deggans is here to help us sort through what to watch. He's the TV and media critic for the St. Petersburg Times. Welcome back to the program, Eric.
Thanks for having me.
Let's get right to it. What should we be watching right now?
Well, maybe it's because I'm a man of a certain age, but I love this show called Men of a Certain Age on TNT. And it's this great comedy, dramedy, about three friends who are pushing 50. And one of the centerpieces of the show that I really love is they get together at a diner before their day starts, and they talk about the things that are really bothering them. And it can be anything like romantic trouble. In one case, it was about having their wallets in their back pockets.
What's that about?
What's that about? It's been getting old. Can't sit on my wallet anymore. I get all this ass bone trouble.
Ass bone trouble?
It's like slants me. It's the hip or the joint. It's all out of whack. I read about it, too. It's not good. No way. You told me about it.
Recognizable voices there.
That's right. We got Ray Romano playing the owner of a party supplies shop who also has dreams of playing in the senior PGA Tour. We've got Andre Brower who's playing a guy who's taken over his father's car dealership. So, you know, these guys are all at crisis points in their life. And they're coping with the big approaching 5-0, you know? If 40 is the new 20, then I guess 50 is the new 30.
Or the new period of constant angst. And it's an interesting show with really edgy camera work, but sometimes it seems like the centerpiece is the casting.
Oh, without a doubt. These are experienced actors who have created really compelling characters, and we're supposed to go along on the ride. And, you know, so much of television is focused on youth. You watch network television, and it's obviously aimed at 20-somethings. But this show is very much for those of us who are, you know, we're aware that we're getting older and we're facing different issues than we faced 20 years ago.
There are a few things that are rolling out throughout the summer on cable. Reach later into the calendar and tell us what we should be looking out for.
Well, anybody who reads my blog, The Feed, knows that I am a sci-fi geek, and so I am geeked up for this show called Torchwood, which started as a show on British television, but Starz, the premium cable channel, is doing, I guess I would say, a little more Americanized version. It's about what happens if everyone on the Earth suddenly stops dying. And Mekhi Phifer, if you remember him from ER, has an amazing turn as a CIA agent who finds himself wrapped up in the middle of this after he gets in a really bad car accident. And let's listen to a little bit of that.
I had a pole through my chest. I was dead, then I wasn't. I had to pay for this bridge. And now I want to know what is going on, all right? Because I was dead, and now I'm not.
I guess a question that the Undertakers of America would want to know also. People aren't dying anymore.
Exactly. This, believe it or not dying is one of the biggest dangers the Earth has ever faced.
Maybe this trend that I'm noticing is a lot of the shows on cable right now seem to have a very narrow focus on a very specific audience. Teen Wolf, Single Ladies, Franklin and Bash, which clearly is going after men of a different age, younger men with really gross taste.
Yes.
And The Protector, which is a show that seems to be focused on divorced mothers.
Yeah, that's a Lifetime show. Cable is an area where you really pick an audience and you super serve them. So, of course, if you're ever going to reinvent the Teen Wolf series, you do it on MTV, which is focused on youth. Why anybody would want to do that, I have no idea. And after watching the first episode of Teen Wolf, I have even less idea. but they tried. They gave it a game try, you know.
We're glad that you watch all that television for the rest of us.
Thank you very much.
That's Eric Deggans. He's the TV and media critic for the St. Petersburg Times. All Things Considered continues right after this.